Leise war gestern, der Time for Metal Podcast.
Ein herzerfrischendes Moin Moin und guten Tag zu einer neuen Folge Leise war gestern, dem Time for Metal Podcast. Ihr hört den Flo am Apparat. Als einziger Host heute, Kai und Simon sind nicht dabei, aber ich habe mir natürlich, weil es Quatsch wäre, mich alleine hier zu unterhalten und Alleinunterhalter zu spielen, habe ich mir natürlich einen wunderbaren Gast ausgesucht für heute und der Zufall hat uns zusammengebracht, aber das werden wir gleich noch besprechen. Und zwar ist das Petros vom Projekt Nine Month Summer und der ist mir jetzt aus der Schweiz, aus Lausanne zugeschaltet. Da es besser ist für ihn, das Ganze auf Englisch zu machen, werde ich jetzt einfach mal auf Englisch das Ganze switchen. Hey Petros, welcome
hey.
To auf Leise war gestern.
Nice to see you. Hello everyone. Thanks for having me on the podcast.
Before we talk a lot of music and a lot of 9 months summer, your solo project, we start with our typical thing we do in our podcast. It's called theme roulette or topic roulette, if you will. And we got a randomizer in the background. We have lots of topics over the years we have collected, and it's usually out of the universe of music, and we talk about 10 minutes straight to this random topic, and then when the timer cuts at 10 minutes, we never allowed to talk about this again in our whole life.
Great. I mean, I'm not much of a gambler, but I'll take this roulette spin, and I'll do my best to stop talking about after the 10 minutes, I promise.
Okay. Let's do this randomizer thing. And the first topic, it's a good one, I think. That's an easy one to start at our show. It's called Music or Show?
Music or Show.
And I start with the 10 minutes and leave the first to you.
Great. So that's a very broad topic, and I'd say open to interpretation.
Yes.
In many ways. But would the or show mean more like listening to music recording versus going to a show? Because that in and of itself is a very, very broad topic. So in my personal experience, I'm really a live show kind of person. I've always been. Also, I would say growing up, a lot of the bands I would like and listen to a lot were not coming for shows where I lived, because I grew up in Greece. I grew up in Athens, which has a big music scene, but a lot of like the big bands don't tend to take detours from Athens that often. I would say it's not like Germany where you'll have big bands often. So I would say very much a show kind of person, but kind of my upbringing also made me appreciate a good recording and good and a good listening experience even at home sometimes.
And due to live shows, we are a little spoiled here in Germany, but often take a rant on it. But it's not in my city. I have to travel 200-300 kilometers, but it's nothing when the band don't even come to your country.
Yeah, no.
Or you're in the US and you have to travel a few states there.
Oh no, I mean for sure. In that regard, I think I've lived now in the Netherlands, France, Switzerland for a few years. So now I've also become that kind of spoiled person that says, "Oh, I have to take a 2-hour train, such a big deal." But you know, I remember when I was growing up, there was this Australian rock band that I really like. They were called the Jezebels. I was absolutely obsessed with their music. I was listening to all of their records. And I had just moved to the Netherlands. It was my first year of studies, and they were not a huge band, so they would never come to Greece for a show. So if I was still living in Greece, I'd have to fly somewhere probably, right? Which was not an option. And I remember I went to see them in Rotterdam. It was probably one of my first shows of a band that I really, really liked a lot. And it was a life changing moment. I wanted to go to the next gig the next day in Amsterdam. I was going crazy, you know. So as a kid growing up in Athens and listening to maybe smaller indie bands, it was a bit of a life changing moment for me.
as we're talking live shows in Netherlands, I love going to the Netherlands to live shows, especially to one of my favorites, Arion. As we talk music or show, they mm-hmm. deliver both. Ian Lucassen is always with his special events in Tilburg.
Yes.
And the last time in September of last year, there are coming people from over 70 different countries all over the world. This was something special. And this is, for me, to our topic, is the perfect measure of music and show together. You have one of the greatest singer casts of all time. You have great, great songwriting, and you had a spectacular light and video show. That's mm-hmm. for me, that's, you can do no better.
No, I totally agree. And I remember when I was living in the Netherlands, I went to quite a few shows, also in Amsterdam, to a lot of like punk gigs that I was into. And I also went to Best Kept Secret, which is a festival actually near Tilburg in the south. And it was the first time I saw Explosions in the Sky live. So as you can imagine, me as a post-rocker, it was also an amazing experience for me. So I had an amazing time there. I went to quite a few shows, and I have nothing but good things to say, for sure.
I've never seen them live, but they put up a great show. I've seen it on YouTube.
Yes. I can only recommend it. I mean, they are a legendary band for a reason, and I've seen them twice now, and it's really always a great show. You cannot go wrong with an Explosions of the Sky show, for sure.
Yeah. I go to the back of my head, and there's something I realized due to the last years. I've started attending concerts about 20, 25 years ago. And at that point, it was okay for me. I'm a big prog rock guy. And from that point on, it was okay for me to only hear the music. Mm-hmm. The guys from the band could wear street clothes in their performance. And when the music starts and it's perfectly deserved in this evening, it was okay for me. But then come guys like I mentioned, Ian Lucassen or Steven Wilson. They put up a great show behind that. Why not both?
No, for sure. I think, it is true that a lot of people who like sort of prog rock and post rock tend to listen to a lot of it just the records, you know, because it's not the kind of music where, you know, there's no lyrics, there's no vocals. So you maybe will not develop as, you know, as strong of a connection with, let's say, the lyrical content of the music and the frontman, perhaps, which might not motivate people as much to go to shows. But I think the kind of experience of some of these music live, especially with a good light show, is absolutely, I think, amazing. I think you hit the nail on the head. There's still very much a reason to see that sort of stuff live and experience it yourself.
Are you a person who sits at home and listens to music on your headphones and do nothing at all?
Yes, it does happen to me. Actually, I'm the kind of person where I listen to music all the time. I can be working, I can be doing pretty much anything, I'm listening to music. I look at my statistics at the end of the year, you know, via whether it's Spotify, Bandcamp, etc. I pretty much spend most of my day listening to music in one way or another. And with that, you know, different genres depending on the mood, of course. I will just sit on my couch, sip my cup of tea, and just listen to music. So that's one way to just really kind of enjoy it and listen to the music really in detail, I think.
So we both live in the same world. I'm always saying I'm a little outside of that actual music scene with all that streaming and stuff, because I so much enjoy what you just mentioned. I enjoy listening to real music, not AI, and I enjoy to put my vinyl on my record player. I enjoy to put CDs in, and this physical thing is attached to me, and I love as back in the days, I sit there reading the lyrics and in the booklet, and I loved it, and I love it. I still love it.
Yeah, no, there's something about it. Yeah, just grabbing a record physically, you know, it's just. That's also why I kind of wanted to have a physical copy of the record, of my record. But it's just, you know, I think all of my favorite records, I have them here. And in this place, I don't even have a record player. But I still have the physical copy. And while I'm streaming it, I will actually open the physical copy and look at it, even if I don't have a record player, just because I like this kind of interaction with the actual object that the artist actually put all this effort in. It's not just pixels and streams and bytes of data. It's actual physical objects, and I think that's what makes the feeling so great, in my opinion.
I see this thing a lot. I attend many concerts and festivals for a magazine, and I see people who buy CDs, who buy vinyl, and they always say, "I stream it at the end of a day, but I like to support your band, and I like something for my shelf at home."
I mean, for sure. I mean, this is, I think, what happens with most people. I think a lot of people buy CDs or vinyls. They also stream the music, but I still think, and that's how I do it as well, I'll still buy a physical copy because that's how you support the artist. Because, you know, I think many of us, including myself, we don't make a we don't really live off of music. It's a hobby. It's something we're passionate about. And the more we can put back into it, the better it is. So I think that this sort of mentality that despite the streaming, despite the kind of all the digital streams of music going on, having a physical copy. And I think in our genres of music is still especially important, and I think it should stay that way.
It's a hobby for us too, here at the podcast and at the magazine. Yes. It's time spending, it's expensive, but it's a lot of fun.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely.
And without this doing, you doing your music thing, we do our magazine and podcast thing, we never have met.
Exactly. So yes, I mean, and here we are, you know, stream later, here we are in a podcast discussing music. So that's what makes this whole scene great, you know, enthusiastic people making music, sharing music, writing about music. And yeah, it's positive vibes, you know.
And that was a perfect last words, because this was a 10-minute timer in our bag.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Just in time.
Just in time.
That was a nice spin.
Yes, I think so too. So, yeah, let's talk about your project, which becoming not much of a solo project lately. I've read something about it, but let's do this later.
Absolutely.
For your personal life, it's clear when you see your Instagram account that the mountains call your name quite often. So do I,
yes.
Because I live in the Harz Mountains here in Germany, and I'm surrounded by the mountains as you. And mm-hmm. Yeah, what do trips into nature and hiking mean to you?
I mean, they actually mean a lot. So, you know, mountains, and not just mountains, also nature in general, has been a big part of my life also growing up. And I think the theme of this record, you know, I put a lot of like personal touches in it, and places that I've been to that have inspired my music, and a lot of them happen to be in the mountains. So that's kind of where this pattern begins. And I think especially here, the Swiss Alps, where I spent a lot of time, have been particularly important for me, because even in more difficult times emotionally, I kind of always found shelter there, and also always found kind of a place where I could exist and kind of a little bit more disconnected from like the cities. And and yeah, so it's been a big source of inspiration for me, I think, being up there, the glaciers as well, which I, you know, I'm absolutely fascinated by glaciers, which we have, unfortunately, not as many as we used to here in the Alps, but we still have some. And just seeing them and being on them is a tremendous experience that I would recommend people do at least once in their life. But yeah, it's kind of all of this mountain inspiration and kind of mixed together with some personal stuff and personal experiences, pretty much.
From now on, it's on my bucket list, because I never went to the Alps before.
Look,
it's always,
I mean,
on my bucket list, and the glacier I've never seen.
I highly recommend it. You know, you hit me up on Instagram. I spent a lot of time there, and I recommend you at least go once in your life. It's really an amazing experience.
Okay. I wanted to ask you this question because I always wondering what music and nature together can do with the mind of somebody. I experienced this with the last album of Alcest, the French band, and yes. It was kind of out of body experience. I was yes. here in the nature and listen to the record the first time, and it sounded so much different to the second time when I sit at home, mm-hmm, home mm-hmm. office, and well, put my headphones on. But it was never this experience what I had with this music in the nature.
Yes, no, it is really it's really an amazing experience. I think actually, if you there's a festival here in Switzerland called Palp Festival. It takes place in Valais, in Valais. It's a canton not far from Lausanne, and they actually set up stages and do concerts in the mountains. So I was there last year. It's just an amazing experience to see these bands perform in the mountains, surrounded by nature, and a lot of the bands that I really like. So I think experiencing some of this music when you're yourself in those situations where maybe some of it was inspired, I think, as you kind of alluded to, is a different experience. And in my case, there's this one song I wrote. It's called Through the Valleys, and I wrote it. It kind of got inspired because I spent a lot of time in a chalet in a place near Evolène, Switzerland, which is a valley above the city of Sion, and that's kind of where it was inspired. This song. And last June, I was on a mountaineering trip, and I was really under a glacier, spending the night in a refuge, and I put the song on again, and it was like sunset over the glacier, just like the most idyllic, beautiful scenery you could imagine in the mountains. And it hit me. I was like, yes, this is exactly what I wanted as a vibe, you know. But yes, it is. It's a kind of music that I think matches a lot of that kind of natural beauty, and you know, the instrumental side of it, I think, leaves more space for interpretation as well.
I only can imagine how this hits different.
it really does. But I think it's also very much enjoyable, I hope, for people who listen to it at home. But if you're ever on a hike and you want to listen to some post rock and just stare at the mountain peaks or sea or whatever you're looking at, I think it's well worth a try.
Not especially inside the mountains, but in the Netherlands, we mentioned before, I went to a cool festival called Midsummer Prog. It's in Falkenburg, and this was an amphitheater in some kind of rocks behind that, and the rocks were enlightened at the night, and that's kind of cool.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, and that's where also the live performance comes into effect, so maybe one day I'll be lucky enough to perform by a mountain. That would be great. But for now, we'll see.
Yeah. So we heard about your inspiration from nature, and now let's hear your inspiration from music. Mm-hmm. I'm a long time post rock fan, so I'm glad that you I heard or were aware of your project called 9 Month Summer for listeners, and the debut album of 2025 was A Keepsake. It was a solo project by you, and I'm a long-time post-rock fan of bands that instant came into my mind when I heard your music, bands like God is an Astronaut, If These Trees Could Talk, This Was yes. Will Destroy You, Explosion yes. in the Sky, you mentioned yes. them before, and also bands, the Midwestern emo bands like American Football, especially, mm-hmm. Came into my mind. How do you, would you describe your musical influences? And
yeah, so I think you kind of summed it up very well. You know, I grew up listening, you know, I'm also a longtime post-rock fan, so I grew up listening mm-hmm. to, you know, Mogwai, Explosion in the Sky, yeah. You know, God is an Astronaut, Sleep Makes Waves. All of these bands were a big influence on me historically. But, you know, when I was in my 20s, I also kind of discovered Midwest emo and maybe more math rock music that also influenced me to a certain extent. But So it's kind of a blend of all of these, you know, a lot of Midwest emo, Asian American football, a band called Clever Girl, which I absolutely love. They only released one EP, but absolutely love their music. Also, the some of the math rock influences, a lot of that basically. I could mention, I think, many bands. I actually have a playlist on my Spotify with some of my influences, because some people have asked me, like, you know, what influenced you. So there are some examples there that you that I think if listeners are interested, they can go in and take a look. But yes, I mean, just the you know, the kind of playing with open tunings, adding some brass instruments as well, some piano, and just playing around also with some more like shoegaze influences that I've been listening to a lot lately. Bands like Soft Cult, which I've been listening to a lot, or a band called NVM. I think Nevermind is their actual name, but they use a short NVM. Yeah, a lot, or, you know, another band called Downward that I really, really have been listening to a lot lately. So all of this kind of like shoegaze, Midwest, emo, post-rock kind of, that's how I like to think of my music being influenced. And yeah, so that's kind of sums up, let's say, my musical influences in a very short time, of course.
I've seen your playlist on Spotify, and I thought that, they are the bands I just mentioned.
Yes, exactly.
They're all over them. I listen to a lot of instrumental music, and the question I've always asked myself is, how difficult is this to tell a story without words?
This is a big one, actually. So it does create some sort of, I would say it's necessarily a challenge. It's just a different way of interpreting the music, because I think, at least in my experience, instrumental music leaves a lot more room for interpretation, as in, you know, based on the moment in life where you first heard that song, that's probably going to define you, how that song makes you feel in the future and what it reminds you of. Lyrics, of course, give you a more direct way to communicate with a listener. You can just write the lyrics, make them relate to the lyrics to your listeners. And that's just one way of doing things. But instrumental music is, in that regard, maybe a little bit more challenging. It's more challenging to create, let's say, this kind of catchy lyrical line that the listener will remember. It's just, you know, instruments. But in my experience, this can be just as powerful. I mean, like some of the songs that bring me the strongest feelings, when the kind of goosebump songs that we all have, tend to be instrumental songs. Not exclusively, but partly as well. So I think that there is room for that. But I don't know what your experience has been with instrumental music and kind of feelings and how you can relate to them.
It's the same kind of way, because it's a lot of room for interpretation, and lyrics often were misinterpreted, I think. You can use it forever you want if it works, okay? No matter what the artist had in mind, written it, but I think I've never been on your social media before. I've never heard about your project before, and I listened to the music, and I thought to myself, this is a nature guy, or a nature band, or nature whatever.
Yes.
I was feeling the nature experience without words. Mm-hmm. So it works.
Exactly. I mean, that's
always the question that come to my mind, how it works.
Yes. No, but that's, I think I'm glad you said that, because that's kind of what I'm trying to communicate with my music. It's about, you know, maybe emotional states that I was in, and kind of the scenery that inspired some of these moments. And in my case, a lot of the scenery tends to be in nature. But yeah, that's kind of the message. And I think the fact that this happens is, to me at least, good news that, okay, like maybe this message does come across even without lyrics.
That's a clear point. One of my favorite songs of the record was also a single. It was a postcard from Antigone.
Yes.
Can you tell us a bit more about the background of the song?
Yes. So that's it's a bit of a, like, let's say, personal story, actually. It's very much a personal story. So Antigone is the Greek name of, so in Greek it's Antigone. It's the Greek name of an island off the coast of Istanbul in Turkey, where my mom and grandma grew up, basically. And this song was inspired because my grandma, of course, passed a few years ago. And that place was very important to her and also to my mother. So it's kind of like a very, it's a tiny little island. If people have visited it, they'll know it's a very special place. It's a very unique place, in Turkey. And it was kind of a memory from the place. I haven't been there many times, but I know my mother and my grandma who grew up there have, let's say, memories of that place. So it's kind of a, hence the postcard from, it's kind of like receiving all of these stories from my mom and my grandma telling me about these places without having actually lived it myself, and trying to sort of like put it into a musical atmosphere somehow, you know, this kind of like, you know, the kind of the stories, the memories, the grief, all of it kind of in one song pretty much.
So this is next good news. The nature thing transported to me. Also, I knew nothing about it. And this song felt very personal. I felt it in some kind of way.
Yeah, it really is
my favorite song.
It really is. And it is a personal song. And a song that it actually took me a while to write because I was going back and forth. I wasn't sure about the melodies and you know, I kind of struggled myself with like, you know, finishing off the song. It's kind of the ones that took me a little bit, let's say, longer to finish off. But it's also kind of a way to remember back, you know, in this case, my grandmother's legacy. And I think it's really an important song for me as well. So I'm glad you liked it.
Okay. Let's talk about the songwriting process. Mm-hmm. I'm a huge fan of Billie Eilish, and at the start of her career, she wrote her songs at home in her room and recorded it there too. And I read an interview with you on the Reverb Dream, mm-hmm. and I read that you did the same thing on a keepsake, like a bedroom guitar player, let's say.
Yes.
Can you outline the songwriting process?
Yes, yes, absolutely. So first of all, yeah, shout out to Mark from Reverb Dream. We did an amazing interview together. So if you like post-rock, and want to follow the Swiss scene, I highly recommend. Now, in the case of like in terms of songwriting, it was very much that. I mean, you know, I was on my own, right? And I had all of these ideas and things, and I was at a point where I wanted to write this, and I'm like, okay, I guess I'll have to do it myself. So I just grabbed my guitar, you know, I plugged it into my DI box, you know, and I was, you know, I just started recording, playing stuff, looping stuff, you know, just writing and writing and writing. My room turned into a pedal board minefield almost. You know, I had to step over pedals. There's like basses left and right, and guitars, and that was pretty much the recording process. I mean, just writing guitars after guitars. I had a producer I was working with called Joey Demers. He's a really talented guy. He really helped me a lot. So, of course, I wrote, you know, the guitars and stuff, but he really helped me with putting together all of it into an actual record. So I probably wouldn't have done it without him. So you know, if there's people out there who are saying, oh, how could I do it? You know, nowadays, I think even app sims have come a really long way. You don't need a very expensive setup to record actually a decent sounding album, I think. So you can very much just do it in your room with the help of someone that kind of can guide you through the producing steps. You can actually kind of release something decent. And if I manage it, I'm pretty sure a lot of other people out there can as well.
But it's the first post-rock rule, get as many pedals as you can, or...
Absolutely, yes. I mean, or plugins on Cubase or whatever you're using as a recording software. But yes, I mean, you know, I could geek out, I could geek on about pedals. I have a few, of course. We all have developed this addiction over the years. Those of us who play guitar and play post rock music. But yes, I had a lot of pedals laying around, and yeah, of course.
I love gear talk a lot. Once I saw Rick run down with the Kinsella brothers of God is an Astronaut, and
oh my god,
damn,
they
have a pedal board as big as the whole scene there.
Oh no, no, for sure. Some of these post-rock guys, I think I have like, I don't know, 7 or 8 different photos where I just literally walk up on stage and literally just take photos of pedal boards, you know, just to try and then try to like see, oh, okay, what is he putting first? Like, is he using a switcher? Is he, it's just a whole, science at this point.
You name it.
Yes.
So you wrote a keepsake on your own, but I also read you're currently in the middle of a process to start out a band.
Yes.
Can you tell us what this this is about.
Yeah, of course. So maybe I should probably give a little bit of context as to why I did it solo to begin with. Mm-hmm. I would say, you know, I think a lot of us in different parts of our lives, you know, like in my case, a time came around and I thought, okay, now is the time I want to do music. I want to write music. Because I've been playing music, also playing in different bands over the years. But sometimes I just, you know, you just want to do stuff. And I think doing it solo can be both a blessing and a curse. The blessing part is the fact that you control 100% of what you do and you can just move forward at your own pace and just do stuff. You don't have to wait for other people. So initially I released it solo mostly because I just want to move the project forward. Mm-hmm. But then of course, I have a lot of friends now and I want to prepare the live shows. We started preparing the live shows together and it's shaping up quite nicely. And so I have quite a few friends joining me. So Martim Lisboa is one of them. So he's a very talented musician. He plays saxophone. He plays bass. He plays pretty much every instrument you give him. So he'll be joining us. I have two friends of mine from Greece who actually live in Switzerland. So Kimon and Manu Karapetsis, who actually knew from Greece that now live in Switzerland as well. So they'll be playing guitar. And we have Ainesh Dash, who's a drummer. He's a friend of ours as well. So we kind of put together this band and now it's becoming a lot less just about me, because I never wanted the project to be just about me. Of course, the first record was my kind of solo record, but I really wanted to make this grow into a kind of group project and have other people kind of give their own musical input as well.
So for all you lonely bedroom guitarists, there is hope.
There absolutely is.
For starting a band.
There absolutely is, yes.
Yeah, let's do another theme roulette.
Oh, let's do it. Spin the wheel.
Spin the wheel. Slow. Okay, I spin the wheel. And the second topic is, which excuse has become a part of the music business?
Ooh, that's an interesting one. So again, music business is a very kind of broad umbrella, I would say. Mm-hmm. I would say, like, so now I'm gonna kind of jump on this one and reflect a little bit, because one point that I've been struggling with, and I think a lot of starting musicians have struggled with in the music business and the music industry as a whole, is, you know, getting your first shows and actually trying to get people to, like, not like pay attention to what you're doing and also like give you a chance to actually perform. And I think the music business, you know, there's a lot of, you know, you will send thousands of emails, never get a reply. You know, that's kind of part of the, I guess, of how the music business is. And I would say the worst excuse is like actually not getting an excuse at all, because oftentimes as a starting musician, you just get ghosted. You just never get a reply. You can try again and try again. Eventually, maybe you get a reply. But I think that's a point that I think many independent musicians like myself, who are just, you know, just starting with their project and trying to like put their music out there, we tend to struggle with a lot, because you can be as motivated as you want. If you know you're kind of new to the scene, maybe you don't know as many people, you will start hitting some walls, which might feel a little bit frustrating at the beginning.
It's a good and a bad thing at the same point. Mm-hmm. Because you can do music on your own very easily today. You mm-hmm. have computers, you have MSIMs, you have all that yes. stuff. But everyone can do this, can yes. upload this on streaming service. And
yes,
that's the problem.
You're right.
And
you're
also
right.
AI yeah. music is coming
sure.
into that.
Yes.
That's a problem.
Mm-hmm. It is a problem. Actually, you kind of have a very important point. So there's a balance. I feel like at least the way what helped me is actually going and talking to people in person. And I think that's something that kind of changes the setting a little bit, because if you're just an online artist, as you said, there's so many of them. I'm sure that people, whether it's bookers, venues, you get inundated with emails. And I understand that. So, you know, what worked for me is actually going and actually supporting local music. I think this is the most important lesson I've learned also before this project, but especially with this project, is support local music. Like go out there, go to the local shows, meet people, see the local bands, talk to people. That's how kind of music flourishes. It's not by just like throwing a like music on a streaming service, doing everything online and trying to like do everything on social media. Of course, social media is important, but go to local shows, talk to people, connect with local musicians, and that's what's going to eventually help you maybe get your first shows as an independent musician.
And there we have the biggest excuse. I talk to you, our listeners, and I see all the fans all over the place. They're ranting on the prices of big shows from big rock or heavy metal bands all over the world. And the prices are insane during the last couple of years since the COVID started. But you have to go to this local shows and support the underground. This is something that we have written on our flags at Time for Metal magazine. Support fucking underground, because when you're not able to spend 20 something on an underground show, an underground local show, then never going to be headliners of the future.
No, absolutely. I wholeheartedly agree with you. And I think this is a trap that a lot of people fall into, where they will stream and stuff and they will listen to music. But I think it's really important for people to keep in mind where their music actually comes from, you know. And in my case, I've really like made an effort to like listen to as much local music as I can, not just because it's really good music, but also because, you know, this is what's going to help these bands move forward, you know, whether it's professionally, musically, all. So, you know, I cannot agree with you more. I actually also made a playlist, which is also I put on my Spotify, which is called Swiss Post. This is literally post-rock bands and post-metal bands in Switzerland, so really local bands. So I think this kind of culture of like supporting local bands, going to the local show, paying, buying a record from these local bands is really what makes a difference for us. Because otherwise, I think a lot of us, you know, we don't make that much money from our day jobs. So that's, we have to support this somehow. So yes, I couldn't agree more. Thank you for bringing it up, Flo. I appreciate it.
I'm so going to listen to this playlist, because I hardly don't know much any bands from Switzerland. There are a few metal bands I know, but in fact, no post-rock bands I know.
Yeah, no, there's quite a few post-rock and post-metal bands around here. And, you know, I could name a few: Leech, Umora, another band from Lausanne called Calcas. They also add some like French spoken word stuff. There's a lot of cool stuff going on, which is why I'm happy to be part of this scene, which I'm still only discovering because I'm rather new to it. But yes, if you want to listen to Swiss post-rock and post-metal, take a look.
Sounds good. I've widespread genres of hard rock and metal music also here in my collection. And what I really love about, as you said, the local underground shows is not especially that they're the best they ever were, but it's a feeling. Yeah. You stand inside a crowd of 50 people, it's sweating, it's always, I listen to a lot of death metal stuff here in the local area, and they always turn on their real amps, not the PA, because there is, often there is no PA. It's a real old school style mic up an old Marshall amp and crank it up to 11.
Absolutely. But that's you know, of course, you know, if people are used to like the perfectly produced shows and stuff, but this kind of like imperfection is part of what makes it charming, you know. Like I won't have to put on my earplugs, and even then, like, I want to feel it, you know.
Yes.
I want to feel the vibration of those big bass cabs shaking the walls. It's part of the experience.
Feeling it in stomach and flattering your trousers.
Absolutely, yes. After a couple of pints, that's what it's all about. So I still think that that's kind of the roots of, especially, I mean, most genres of music. So I think people who complain about shows being expensive, support your local bands first, and it will make things a lot easier for those bands to make it out there.
Big benefit out of it is you can buy a beer for €2 and not for 8, 9, 10 something in the big stadiums.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, like I live in Switzerland, so maybe our budgeting is a little bit different.
Yeah.
But yeah, so yeah, I agree that it's still gonna be cheaper than going to and then overpaying for a beer at a massive stadium show, for sure.
There's one excuse one of my favorite singers mentioned. It's Einar Solberg from Leprous. He mentioned that he often sees cancellations due to trivial illnesses. Mm-hmm. He says, yeah, okay, when you're down to something, okay, when you really can't put on a show, don't do it. But he stated it on Instagram, he often sees cancellation due to trivial illnesses. Have you seen this problem before, that somebody says, oh, okay, I have a little minor flu and I don't go to put on a show today?
It happened to me, and I've mostly been on the receiving end of having gigs that I wanted to go to being canceled. But I think the trivial illness is a bit of a broad term. We're saying this now, but we have our first show planned in Zurich on the 12th of May. And actually, the bass player and saxophone player is currently at the hospital with a bad knee injury, for example, right? We probably won't have to cancel that. It's a bit. So right now you kind of hit where it hurts, you know. But
that's not trivial illnesses.
I would argue it is not. It's not a simple flu. So, Martin, if you're listening to this, we're with you. Get well soon. And we're looking forward to having you on the show. But it also depends if it's your vocalist and they have a flu and they cannot sing. It's a big debate. Do you go forward with the show knowing that the quality of the show will be severely diminished because of like vocal ranges being strained? If it's just a simple flu or something, yeah, like come on. If people are making the effort to like pay for your show and come from a different city, yeah, if it's just a minor inconvenience, power through it, get some painkillers, play the show, I would say. Yes. But again, this is very tricky.
You get your money for the show back, but always you travel from far away, you book a hotel and something, and you never get that money back.
There was a big issue. So there was this Linkin Park concert here in Switzerland, which actually Yes.
To interrupt you, because it was the timer. And that is the rules at our podcast. When 10 minutes are over, I have to interrupt you.
Perfect. I'll take it.
Yes. It was very, very big pleasure to have you here in our podcast. Was
thanks for
a lot of
me.
Fun. I think we're on the same page what music is, and I guess we can talk for hours about
absolutely
music.
We could, but
but that nobody gonna listen to. but I have at the end of the show, always at the end of the show, some special thing is you have a song you can wish yourself a song which we play at the end of our show.
Yes, I will absolutely do that. And of course, I'll pick a Swiss song from a Swiss band to keep it local. I would also like to like maybe tell people that we have our first show in Zurich on the 12th of May. So if you're around Zurich, if you're or Southern Germany and you want to see us, we'll be doing a show opening for a Chinese band coming from China called The Summer Fades. It's a concert organized by Bergmal, which is a booking agency, which is very famous here in Switzerland. They book a lot of interesting post-rock bands. So yeah, come say hi. If you want to have us at a concert, feel free to send us a message. We are trying to book shows at the moment, so feel free to reach out. And in terms of song, I'm going to go with a song by a band called Umora. So that's Umoora. And the song is called Kong, Kong. So it's a nice post-metal song. And of course from a local band from Basel, Switzerland. So I hope the listeners are going to like it, basically.
Okay, sounds cool. Yeah, as I mentioned before, when you, the listeners, had some bands we talked about, like God is an Astronaut, Mogwai, Explosion in the Sky, and so on, and you really like post-rock, I highly recommend to give a listen to A Keepsake from 9 Months Summer. It's a great record. And yes, see you again when it's called Leise war gestern, der Time for Metal podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for everything.